Good morning. I'm Rio Skeando. Please call me Rio. It's easier. I got a PhD degree in this March from University of Tokyo and the supervision of Toru Yamashita. He's in the Earthquake Research Institute in Tokyo. If you have a question or comment, please be clear. Otherwise, I can't understand. I can't follow what you say, so please. Okay, this is the purpose of this talk here. There are mainly four purposes. So first is I want to deliver fault constitutable. It's applicable to earthquakes, natural earthquakes. I want to derive such a constitutable from numerical models and laboratory derived constitutables. And the second is I want to understand the geometrical complexity of natural fault zone. It's including the formation process and the mechanical effects. And the third is proposing a conceptual framework into earthquake models regarding geometry and scales. This is the reason I introduced a new conceptual framework that is called multi-hierarchy model. This is consisting of micro and meso and macro scales. And finally, I want to examine the effectiveness of limitations of the constitutive model. So this is the table of contents of this today's talk. First, I briefly introduce the overview of the seismological and the geological framework. And I want to clarify the motivation of this model. I took rather longer the introduction part. First, I mentioned the geologically observed structure of natural fault zones. And the second, I talk about the current seismological framework of earthquake modeling. And I want to point out some problems involving this framework. And next, I introduce our new model. And I show some application for these parts. One application is the formation of fault zone as a dynamic branch formation. And due to branch formation, I want to consider the effects for the macroscopic fault constitutable. I want to focus on the scaling relation of the fracture energy in this part. Okay, because I'm a geophysicist, so I want to begin with carefully watching the natural force geometry. Okay, this figure shows the surface rupture stress appearing in the 1992 Landes earthquake. And rupture nucleated at here, this point, and propagated into this direction. And the rupture makes some bifurcation here and here. And in this earthquake, rupture propagated in this non-planar for geometry. So this is a scale of 10 kilometers. And when we magnify this area, we can obtain this figure. And 1 kilometer is this length. So as you can clearly show here, these are the also the surface rupture stress, but they have much smaller sweep value than this main fault. So in this scale, we can see the a lot of rupture segments like the and the, this one. So we can see the some bifurcation geometry. So and next we magnify this area, we can obtain this kind of sketch. But these sketches are obtained on different fault. But I want to point out just a general characteristic, so it's no problem. So 0.5 centimeter is here. And in this scale, so you can see the some different structure. So this gray color denotes these are different materials. So the but the important thing is these materials are damaged and pulverized, so into some fine grain. But second important thing is plan for the having the large strip is very localized into this black thick line. So the this is an important thing in this video. So what I want to emphasize is we have we can get a different view corresponding to the different scales. Yes, that's what I want to emphasize. So this is Benzion and Sami's the figure. And Ephrud Benzion already mentioned this figure in a few weeks ago in this program. So I think he talked about by this figure. He mentioned the similarity between these scales. It's a framework of continuum mechanics, granular and fractal. But I want to emphasize here is the difference between the scales. So this scale, the fault zone is no more the mathematical thin plane as shown here. And in these scales, we know about the property of width for these faults. This is a map view of such a fault zone. Main fault stress is here, but we can observe the property of width. It's a weakened area surrounding the main fault. So we mentioned the property of width. We use the term of fault zone. And this is a general illustration for such fault zone. So main fault is here, and the principal slip plane is here, but we have to consider the surrounding fault zones. The effect of the surrounding fault zone is very important. So another characteristic of strength is, another characteristic of fault zone is a strength distribution inside the fault zone. This type of measurement is very difficult, so there are not so many examples, but one of the examples is obtained in Nojima Fault in Japan. This is the source fault of 1995 Kobe earthquake. This is Osaka and Kyoto is here, and Kobe is here. So Nojima Fault is located here and damaged to the Kobe city. So there are some drilling projects conducted here. and they have two drilling sites. So this is sorry, I have to check my mail. Okay. This is a cross-sectional view for this in this area. In this figure, the blue curve shows the drilling. So then the red curve shows the fault. The drilling drilled through the fault for 4 points in this measurement. And so this is the result. These four figures correspond to the different sites. And the horizontal axis denotes the distance along this in the horizontal direction. And vertical axis denotes the shear strength, fixture strength. It is measured in the laboratory. But this fixture strength means the values divided by normal stress. So in this paper, they consider this is a frictional coefficient. So what I want to emphasize here is in this central part is corresponds to the part of the principal slip plane. But if we compare the value of strength from here to here, for example, we don't have not so large difference between them. So this change is very gradual. Yes, this is what I want to emphasize here. So next I talk about the current framework of seismology to understand the earthquake rupture process. So basically we so seismology try to understand the earthquake rupture by the mechanical, as a mechanical framework, we consider the earthquake as a weak plane inside the elastic medium. And on weak planes, the rupture process is obeyed for some kind of force considerable. So the elastic medium's response is not so difficult. So the problem is here. Problem in here is evaluation of this force considerable. So to try to understand the force considerable, so we employ basically the results of laboratory experiments, because we can't conduct experiments in the scale of natural earthquakes. This basically difficulty. So we generally consider laboratory experiments, and to obtain the fault considerable in earthquake scale, we consider the results from seismic analysis, some kind of seismic analysis. So this is a basic framework. And I want to point out some problem involving in this framework. So now I want to think about the laboratory experiments. This is, I forget the thing. So as mentioned before, what's important thing is understanding of fourth zone. So the problem, what the problem here is, we can measure the effects of fourth zone. So the maybe someone consider that is yes, because some experiments sandwiching the gauge material is already conducted, like Marrow and Kilgo. But the problem is sample scale. It's less than 1 meter. And as mentioned before, the structure of fourth zone is not only a monotonic layer of gauge material. So the fourth zone also involving the damaged or the elastic continuum material. Combination of these materials is might be important. So the third difficulty is monitoring of stress and displacement is only measured on the axial load and displacement, like this. Sample is here, and usually they monitor this and this variation. It's a situation is very similar to the this kind of rotational measurement. They don't measure the inside of this sample. The third problem is maybe yes. Discord. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Loading rates.
No. This difference is this is obtained by them and okay. So and the difference is surface topography. It's determined by the
different
sample. Okay. Okay, some experiments don't conducted on such axial monitoring. So Onaka et al. 1990 measured stress and displacement on some parts or breakout surface. And they obtained the rupture propagation effect like this. And this is a recent work by the Rusak and Kanamori. And by using elasticity, they observed this kind of rupture propagation effect. But I want to note that is their fourth surface is still a polished very nominally flat surface, so the effects of fourth zone might not be assimilated. Okay, next I talk about the scale of earthquakes. The seismic inversion analysis enable us to obtain the dynamic process during the earthquake rupture. Okay. This is an example of Kobe earthquake. Asuka starts from here, and they have some seismograms by these seismic stations. This is a result of Ilian Takeo. I forgot to show it. By using aftershock distribution, this is a special distribution aftershock, they assumed the fault plane here, and this is a cross-sectional view. So they invite they conduct an inversion seismic analysis, so they obtain this type of slip distribution during earthquakes. And next step, they use a slip history obtained here, and they now calculate the stress change history on the fault. So finally, they get this type of fault constitutive. This is a slip and this is a stress. And their conclusion is that they observe the similar the slip weakening behavior is similar to the laboratory. So, but there is still a problem. The problem is the spatial resolution of this analysis. This spatial resolution is up to 1 kilometer. In conclusion, I think there are mainly three problems. One is a difference of scale they can measure and observe. We don't have any information between 1 meter and 1 kilometer. And the second is we can't measure the effects associated with rupture propagation in fault zone. And the third thing is laboratory simulated fault zone, the only reproduced fault zone. Characteristics of Gaudio area. We have to overcome this problem to apply the friction and rupture mechanics into the earthquake. So to overcome this problem, we introduce the macroscopic scale like this. So we know this small scales and this large scale, but the problem is we don't understand this fault zone scale. So this fault zone scale, we call this scale as a mesoscopic scale. And introducing this mesoscopic scale, so we want to reproduce the effects of fault zone by the numerical simulation. So this is a illustration of comparison between the current framework and our new merge hierarchy model framework. This figure shows how to understand fault constitutable from laboratory experiments. So in current seismological model, considered the this macroscopic scale as in terms of laboratory experiments and extrapolating the concept and the result from this. But what I want to emphasize is we want to understand the effects of fault zone. So to enable this, we consider the concept and the results obtained in laboratory scale. We consider such concepts they are only valid in the mesoscopic scale. This is the scale of photon. So, and next, as a result of entire process in fourth zone, we finally obtain the photoconstitutable in macroscopic scale. This is observable from the seismic analysis. So this is a conceptual framework of our magic hierarchy model. Okay, this was the introduction. So next I talk about the method I use for numerical simulation. We employ the boundary integral regression method. It's not, I think it's popular. So in boundary integral regression method, we can obtain the traction change by the step history and the force and the convolution with the Green function. Okay. So if you consider the boundary condition as traction, like some kind of function, you can obtain the current rate like this. And so the advantage of this boundary integral regression methods are these two things. One is we can accurately treat the arbitrary shape of non-planar force. And like this one. And next one is a rupture path can be self-chosen. So it means that we don't need to prescribe the rupture surface. Okay, so it enables us simulation like this. So rupture starts from here and the propagate from here. But we want to know what happened next, so we can add some special patches like here. So we also can add this kind of patches. So we can obtain, we can treat the bifurcation, and we can follow this type of our self-chosen crack path. Yes.
Whenever you have such a bifurcation, then the range over which the system can be described by an elastic Green's function changes.
Oh yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And if you really do the full time dependence, it's not obvious to me that the boundary control methods are faster than finite elements. Have you ever looked at that? Because you have to now go over a long history, and you have to interactions
over
the entire
range. Mm-hmm.
They don't paralyze well. Have you looked at that at all?
Yeah. You mean the boundary integral have a heavy computational. Yeah. Okay. Yes, but at one point is we can parallelize and this calculation.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and next one is we don't need to remesh finite element. Finally, if you want to try to treat this kind of problem, we have to introduce some remeshing method for finite elements.
Okay. You have new interface developing all the time,
mm-hmm.
and then you have to recalculate
the Green's function. Yes. So.
Anyway, we should talk.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Is my clear? Anything else? Yeah. Okay, anyway, this is the advantage of boundary integral regression method. As to consider the fault zone formation, I introduce this simple model called match branch models. In this model, basically, we consider the hierarchical structure of main faults and branches. So in the main faults, we assume the main faults only propagate on a straight plane. And bifurcation could occur at equal space plus red point. This is the sake of simplification. And for branch faults, the rupture path of branch faults is assumed to extend into the direction of maximum shear. And so the rupture path of branch can be self-true. Okay. Okay. Concretely speaking, so this is a situation we are doing at the bifurcation points at prescribed. If main fault tip encountered at the bifurcation point, we calculate the shear traction at into this direction, and also we calculate the shear traction on the this outside this plane outside of main fault, and we evaluate the value of shear traction in terms of this angle. So by the grid searching method, we find the maximum value of shear traction. So if the shear traction exceeds a fixed strength, rupture can bifurcate like this.
Anderson, yes. Do you assume that the peak strength is in fact the same off the fault as off the main fault as it is on the main fault? In other words, the peak strength.
Peak strength is we assume the same value on here and here.
Why?
This is just a sake of simplification. So we don't, in this calculation, we don't want to build more complex.
No, but the fault is, a zone of weakness to begin with. It existed for, let's say, a million years.
Oh, yeah.
So
but
it's trying to break into,
I see. But please remember the strength distribution along the fault zone, inside the fault zone. I already shown that in the case of Nojima fault, it was not, they do not observe the such great difference between the main fault and the branch. Branch fault means the inside of fault zone.
But again, those branch faults exist not necessarily at a place where you have, let's say, a maximum shear stress occurring off the fault. They exist at some angle that may not be even close to your 30 degrees.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, you're creating new fault
when
you cause those branches.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. We don't assume the pre-existing weak plane for the branches. This is the point. Okay. So, as a fault constitutable, we simply assume the slip weakening law. And this parameter is, as I mentioned just before, so they are homogeneously distributed. They have same peak strength and same residual strength entirely in the medium. So, but initial stress have a difference between main force and branch force, because we assume a rupture in the homogeneously loaded media. So the value of initial stress is, can be varied in the angle of force. So we assume the homogeneous situation, the initial traction simply depends on cosine of this angle. So in following calculation, I only show the non-dimensional variable, but the basically the parameters, that is the parameter we assume is equivalent to the natural force case. Okay, this is a result of fault zone formation. It's nucleation occur here and propagate like this and like this, but I'll show you animation for this figure. It's much easier to understand. Okay, rupture starts on the main fault here and propagating into this direction. And in here, some branches so emerges. And what interesting is only on the branches, so some rupture propagate. And they formed, they are spontaneously arrested on this line. This is one interesting thing. And now, one of the branches unsteadily grows. And they never stop in this situation. Okay. So, no. This is another animation. Okay, I'll show you this. This is a slip. What I show you is a slip rate, and this is a vertical angle. Vertical axis is a slip now. You can see some similar one. But the interesting thing is the slip on the branch is very smaller than the on the main fault. So, but when one branch growing larger, slip on the main fault is reduced by the negative interaction, but we can see it in this image. Okay, so now I show you the detail of this snapshot. Okay, one of the important things is length distribution for these branches. It's distributed like this, and these branches are spontaneously arrested as you. And so, because this lengths of these branches are much smaller than the total lengths of main force, so we call these branches as mesoscopic branches. Okay, so in contrast to that, this branch can grow into the length comparable to the manifold. So we call this branch the macroscopic branch. Okay, so to emerge this macroscopic branch, the length of manifolds needs some length of this length of this manifold need to exceed some critical length. Okay, this is secondly important. Okay. One of the interesting thing is angle of these branches are almost constant in 30 degrees, like this. And the next interesting thing is rupture velocity for the manifold. Okay. This red curve shows the rupture velocity of manifolds as a function of rupture propagation distance. This green curve shows the planar fault case. So we want to compare these values. So if there are no branches in this area, these two curves are same. But there is some difference here. But this is due to the averaging problem of averaging. That is different. But basically, they are same. If we don't have no branches, it's okay. But if the mesial branch emerges, the rupture velocity of much bifurcation model are reduced like this. And what the interesting thing is, rupture velocity is reduced at 95% of red wave. But as you may know, the terminal velocity of planar fault is red wave, so it's clearly reduced by the effect of mesial branch. Okay, now I showed these branches, mesial branches are passive effect by associated with the main force growth. So in boundary integral equation, we can write the contribution from some branches separately. Okay. This is a special integration part, and this is a temporal integration part. So in the special integration part, we can divide the contribution from main force and the branches, neighboring branches, and this is the contribution from one branch itself. In this figure, I show this shear traction change by divided to the contribution. And the interesting thing is contribution from manifold is dominated to other contributions. So the conclusion from this figure is rupture occurring on mesial branch is a passive one due to the manifold. So this is schematics for the contribution of manifolds. So this is figure shows the stress field due to manifold. So the stress is increased in at the tip of manifold. They are decreased side of manifold. Okay, so the mesoscopic branches only grow in this area. Okay. So if we consider this situation, we can understand why the length distribution of mesobranches becomes triangular shape. The size of this stress enhancement area is become proportional to the length of manifold, because in this simulation we obtain the constant value of rupture velocity. So this is similar to the situation of the steady state rupture propagation. So if we allow such approximation, we obtain the increasing of stress enhancement area like this. So as a result, we obtain this type of triangular shell at length distribution of mesoscopic branches. Okay, so this is a parameter study of the such triangular shape. So one of the characteristic lengths in this simulation is the spacing of these branches. We call it this delta B in this one. So this figure shows a different value of delta B. Delta B is smaller in this direction. Okay. We calculate the gradient of this this gradient. This is the envelope of length of metal branches.
I'm sorry. Okay. So delta B is the parameter you put into the model, or does it not choose the branch at every point that you put there?
Yes, every branch could occur on every assumed point.
It occurs on every assumed
point? Yes, yes. Oh, it's in this calculation, so we specify the angle. But okay. This is a result obtained by this one. Horizontal axis shows the value of delta B. Normalized by LC. LC is a critical critical crack length to the unstable rupture propagation. One of the critical lengths characteristic. Okay, but this is a normalized length, normalized spacing of this branch. And what the interesting thing is here is this gradient is fitted by logarithmic function. Okay. So basically, this figure shows the gradient is an increasing function of delta B. This can be understood by this type of cartoon. So as mentioned earlier, the crack have area of stress decreasing and at the side of these cracks. Okay. This is the main fault and this their branches. So because smaller delta B means larger effects of this stress shadow. So as a result, if we assume the smaller delta B like this, the width of fourth zone is also decreased. Okay. So now I want to focus on the emergence of macroscopic branch. So emergence of macroscopic branches can be understood in terms of energetic condition for unstable rupture propagation. So we know about linear elastic fracture mechanics. So if static energy release rate exceeds the fracture energy, the rupture starts to propagate unstable. Okay. So, and we also know that there is a critical crack length for unstable rupture growth. So in this case, if the length of branch exceeds some certain length, so we can understand that it's propagated unstable. So, but in same time, increasing the branch length, so energy supply from manifolds have to be increased. Okay, this is a this figure shows such situation. Okay, the horizontal axis shows the length. Horizontal axis shows the distance along branches, and vertical axis shows the stress change due to the manifold. And we obtained two different stress change at the different branches, on the different branches. We can clearly observe the stress increasing due to manifold is increasing from this to this, and this to this. Okay. Okay. But we can't have the critical lengths analytically in this complex model. So we have to determine this type of lengths by the numerical simulation. So this is a parameter study for this numerical simulation. Okay. As mentioned, this is a dependence on the delta B again. Okay. And the delta B is smaller in this direction. So as a result, we obtain this function, the length of bifurcation is a decreasing function of delta B. So this simply means if delta B becoming larger, the negative interaction between branches decreases, so the length to occur the macro branches is also increased. But this function is not so simple as shown in earlier, so this is not a logarithmic. So the reason to obtain this complex function is considered later. Okay, there is another characteristic length in this simulation. This is the length of breakdown zone. Breakdown zone is a zone located at 40 to decrease the stress to the residual area. Okay, we changed break down the ranks in here, and this ranks is the largest in here and the smallest in here. So we obtained this function as a result. So the this figure shows if the breakdown zone length is increased, the length for the bifurcation, macroscopic bifurcation, is also increased. But this point is a problem. We don't have a monotonic increasing or the bifurcation length. Well, this is considered right. Okay, so this is another interesting result. This is slightly complicated. In next slide, we focus on the length distribution in this area. This area is just before the emergence of macro branch. Well, this in this area, the length distribution is the monotonic and approximated by linear function. But in this area, we see the large fluctuation from this linear scaling. We want to know why this kind of fluctuation occurs in this area. So to understand that, we show the results that is conducted for the different value of breakdown zone length. This breakdown zone length is slightly changed between this simulation. So because these parameter difference is very small, we obtain almost same curve, same curve in this area. But in this area, the difference of these cases are very different between these cases. Okay. It means in this area the resulting formation is very sensitive to the detail of this system. Okay. So I want to explain the fluctuation, enhancement of a fluctuation. Okay, basically this can be understood by two considerations. One is the emergence of macro branches at the critical point of bifurcation, okay, before the stable rupture to the unstable rupture. And this is at the critical point. And the next one is showing earlier, these branches are affected as a negative feedback between them. As a result, the side of larger branches, the smaller one tends to be located by the negative interaction. Yeah, so in the next step, if next branch here, because of the shadow effect due to this branch is smaller, this can be larger. So in this area, this kind of interaction occurs. So we obtain this enhanced fluctuation length distribution. This figure is quantitative analysis for these cartoons. Okay, we observe this type of fluctuation. Really. Okay. So I want to compare the force geometry obtained in this simulation to the natural force one. We obtained similar scaling relation between the fault zone length and fault zone width. This is a geological result obtained by Bama and Shoritz. And they observed micro crack density along the fault zone width direction. They observed the monotonic decreasing of micro fracture density in the direction of fault, perpendicular to fault. Okay, combining with another data set, they observed this type of linear scaling relationship between fault length and process, this is a fault zone width. Okay, then next I want to consider about emergence of branches. So as I mentioned earlier, the variation of strength is very gradual inside the fault zone. This suggests that bifurcation could occur in the fault zone. And this is another observation. This is an outcrop sample observation. In this figure, 1 millimeter is here, and in this zone, there is a shield tactite layer. This is a melted material due to the friction stress. What's important thing is they observed the intrusion of this material into the side of perpendicular to the fault direction. Okay. And this type of things are generally occur around the main fault. And this type of thing can trigger the bifurcation. I think so. So as a comparison, so we can say either such bifurcation could occur inside the fault zone. Okay. I already mentioned this one. Okay, I want to focus on this gradual change. Okay, this is a comparison to different simulation models. These simulations assume some kind of rheological constitutive model for the off-plane damage. He considered the weakening of rigidity due to the microcracking. And he considered the Coulomb yielding of surrounding material. All of these results, they observed this triangular shape of fault zone. And they are similar to the results we obtained. And this is another calculation conducted by discrete element method. He observed this type of triangular shape. Okay, so, but I want to emphasize here is these rheological constitutive models can treat the emergence of macroscopic branch because they're rheological model. So if we introduce this type of rheological constituent model, we could miss the possibility for of a macroscopic branch. It could complex the scaling. Okay, this is a summary for this talk, but we have some slides after this. Okay, we investigate the formation process of bifurcation structure and conduct the dynamic rupture simulation. So there are two distinct type of branching exists. One is a mesoscopic branch. It emerges if the manifold length does not exceed the critical length. Another one is a macroscopic branch, and it could emerge if the manifold length exceeds a critical value. And rupture velocity is converted to the constant value less than relative velocity. Okay, next one is the regarding on the reconstruction of macroscopic fault constituent block. I want to evaluate the macroscopic constituent block, but I can finish it quickly. Okay, I don't need it. To obtain the macroscopic constituent block, I do some process. And to the macroscopic constituent block, we calculate the stress and difference of displacement at the outside of this polyzone. Okay, so this information contains the effects of this fault zone. So we can conclude it, the stress and displacement of the fault zone is can be used for the macroscopic constituent block. Okay, this is a case of one bifurcation model. So this red curve shows the assumed mesoscopic constituent block. Okay. And this green curve shows the obtained macroscopic fault constituent block that is measured outside of the fault. Okay. Comparing this curve, we can find the increasing of the value of D sub C in this area. Okay, so the effect of these branches appeared as increasing of the value of D sub C by bifurcation. Okay, this is a basic understanding for the bifurcation. So we do similar thing for the multiple bifurcation model and obtained such macroscopic constituent block in the within the this length before the emergence of macroscopic branches. Okay. This is a result. These curves correspond to the macroscopic constituent block obtained at each point. This one is here, and this one is here, and this one is here, and so on. Okay, in this figure, we can observe a monotonic increase of the value of D sub C. Okay. This is understood by the increase of photon V is affected to the increasing of the value of D sub C. Okay. Because the measure of this triangle is equal to the fracture energy, so we can conclude that the scaling of fracture energy is proportional to the manifold length in this simulation. Okay, then similar results is recently obtained by the Crow yielding model as shown before. In this figure, this is a assumed value on the manifold. These values are consumed energy outside of force, main force. It means energy consumption in the force zone. Okay, so this is a conclusion of the talk. So I developed a match hierarchy model taking account of mesoscopic force structure. In this case, we consider branches. So investigate the effects of mesostructure or macroscopic force considerable. And as a result, macroscopic force fracture energy, this sub C is dissipated on the off main port branches. And the macroscopic fracture energy is dependent on the dynamic rupture process itself. So the fracture energy in macroscopic scale is not a material constant, nor the determined by the local process. It depends on the slip or slip rate at the local. And as a scaling law, we obtain the linear type of scaling law of the sub C. So the constant rupture velocity is understood by this scaling law. Also, we don't conduct this type of calculation of we don't conduct a calculation of macroscopic friction law for after the emergence of macroscopic branch. It might be so considered to be the complex after the emergence of macroscopic branch. Okay, so this is the final slide. And this is the implication for constitutive modeling of earthquake rupture obtained by this simulation. So first is considerable have to include the information reflecting the entire history of rupture propagation. It's for example, rupture propagation distance or the some kind of mean field of strain around the main fault. It is a reflected value of the entire rupture process. And this means they do not determine only the local information at the fault surface and slip at each point, slip rate or some kind of slip dependent variable, dead variables. Okay, and the next one is a rheological approximation of secondary ruptures could miss the possibility of unstable secondary shear rupture. Okay, so it means maybe we need to consider each single cracks for the obtaining of macroscopic considerable. Okay, thank you.
velocity of the main rupture when you don't see that
we see the such cracks and I will try to explain by this figure. So if we assume the initiation points for the bifurcation at this area have a very low rupture velocity because it's an acceleration phase. So we have assume here we don't obtain such a mesoscopic phase, mesoscopic branch. Okay, this is one answer. But we assume that here it's still the rupture velocity is still low comparing this area. If you assume here, so rupture is arrested by itself by the emergence of bifurcation. Okay, so the answer is we may have we may not have a mesoscopic branch in the sufficiently slow rupture velocity. We don't have. But if it exceeds some certain value, we have branches. But in this case, it could arrest the main fault itself. But we don't want to arrest the main fault in this simulation, so we don't assume the branches in this area. Okay. Your question is a dependence on the length of bifurcation?
No, but it's the first order phase tangent. In other words, once you get the bifurcation, you reduce the stress if the bifurcation continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry,
describing the velocity, so I'm not sure how you
have to investigate it. You haven't checked if you make the velocity slower after the crack bifurcation, whether it's...
Which bifurcation?
Large
one.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't check the rupture velocity curve. But in feeling, just I'm checking the this is no conclusion, but it's slightly decelerated after the emergence of the large bifurcation. Yeah, I have to check it after the emergence of the saturation.
Is this generally observed in immediate field observations, which shows immediate real fault, showing that there were cones of damage around the rupture from the earthquake? But it didn't, maybe it didn't buy really fast to be that they noticed it, but it seemed like the damage cones were isotropic, were equally on one side of the fault, and the other. Mm-hmm. In your model, I assume that branching apparently is the normal side of the fault. So is that
the risk of the scene that you get more damage on that side of the fault, or is the opposite? There is still controversial because in natural case, the the modeling inside of bifurcation depends on the relation between the rupture initiation points and the propagation distance. If it starts from here, so this bifurcation must be in this side. So, yeah, many people say different things. Some people say that there is an anti-symmetric to them, but some people say that they are rather symmetrical. We don't have, still don't have a conclusion about this problem.
But is the assumption here that you're getting, you always, in the model of this kind, of always get
Oh, yes, basically it's normal stress effect, but in this simulation we don't consider directly the effect on normal stress, okay, because we just assume the constant value of strength, it does not depend on the normal stress. Okay, but just a sake of simplification, but if we actually assume the normal stress dependence, we get this answer.
The structure that you see on the surface, how far does it go in? How far does it continue when you look into the deeper in the earth? Do you really have this kind of damage?
I don't know.
All the way down the
It's difficult to answer by the simulation and also by the geological observation because we can't observe this. But this result suggests such kind of thing could occur through the direction there.
What is the role of velocity?
Yes, we can observe such low velocity zone by seismic observation.
So you can interpret that as damage zone?
Maybe that's better. Okay. Thank you very much.